and welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes to discover the trials and tribulations of setting up a business. And as you guys know, we focus on the tough times and the mental health that can have effects on founders running the businesses. Today we have a super exciting episode. I mean, I always start with super exciting episode, right? But every episode is super exciting. We have the two Nicks from Berksey Hard Seltzer. Guys, how you doing?
Hey, Harry. Yeah, really good, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. All good. It's a bit wet and windy outside. I tried to play tennis earlier and it didn't go to plan. how about you boys, okay?
Yeah, all good. I think that's one of the perks of running an alcoholic drinks business is when it gets a little boring and you can't play tennis.
That's so good.
We're well stocked on work drinks.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, for the listeners who haven't seen me, I make it sound like I'm some sort of Rafa Nadal. I'm absolutely not. I'm a pint and a cigarette kind of guy. Cool. All right, guys. Well, I mean, like, if we could just kick off, like, give us a bit of sort of background on both of you, a bit of career, like sort of how you came to starting Berksey and then we'll sort of lead into the conversation from there.
For sure, yeah. So, as Harry kind of introed it, I'm the other Nick, so two Nicks, Nick Graham and Nick Johnson. We're actually really old friends, so known each other over 20 years now, which is
quite scary, actually.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy 20 years and set up a business together. But yeah, Berksey is a hard seltzer, and for those who don't know what a hard seltzer is, it's essentially a flavoured alcoholic sparkling water sold here throughout the UK. In what's quite an exciting category, one that's certainly growing quite quickly, but absolutely massive out in the US. And we were one of the first brands to launch over here in the UK. I'm sure Nick can paint a bit of a picture of how we came up with Berksey and what it was all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So a few years ago now, time flies. Pre-COVID, we were on this amazing trip, three friends out to see actually Nick's twin brother in Canada. We spent this week in Toronto just kind of exploring, having an amazing time. One evening, I think we were a little bit hungover from the day before, coming into the weekend, or probably even mid-weekend. Nick's twin brother, Ali, suggested we sort of go to the LCBO, which is where you get all the kind of liquor and various beers from. We didn't really fancy beers that evening. He goes, well, have you guys tried hard seltzers before? We're like, what's that? I've literally no idea what that is. Kind of two words that didn't really make sense together. So we bought this sort of, basically a bag of cans when sat in the park.
In a brown paper bag.
Yeah, brown paper bag, yeah. And sat in this amazing place, sort of right in the centre of the city, which, looking back on it now, is kind of like the almost like a mecca for the brand. And that was Berksey Park. Where we first tried, hard seltzer, the category as a whole. And we just sat there and had a bit of a, epiphany. We absolutely loved the product. And we were sat in this, it was a beautiful sunny evening, sipping these light, refreshing drinks, had a bit of a moment, said to each other, why is this not a thing back in the UK? Just couldn't believe it. It ticked like every single box for what we would want as like an alternative to a beer or wine or kind of a hard drink. So we just couldn't believe it, and wanted to kind of bring that concept back to the UK. So that was really how Berksey was born, off the back of like a holiday with friends, where we discovered a thing that we loved, and wanted to kind of bring it back. So yeah, and that's the story of Berksey.
Love it. I love those stories where sort of travelling then turns into a proper business idea. Like you see it within Jimmy's Iced Coffee tells a really good story about how he came across iced coffee and brought it back to the UK. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's sort of a really great way to sort of bring the business across the pond, as it were, and sort of merge the cultures together.
Yeah, and it's one thing to go on holiday and say, get a bit drunk and say, let's start a business together.
I was going to say, actually, how many of these did you guys consume? Was there a moment where you're like, fuck, like...
anxiety the next day, like, did we really agree to do
anxiety, that's so good. Love it. Amazing, okay, cool. Well, I know we were having a little chat sort of pre-recording this just about a couple of stories and the tough times that you guys have gone through. I know there's a couple that I really want to delve into because I think it's going to be really interesting listening for the listeners, and also something very different that we haven't yet kind of covered on Untold, which I'm really excited. I had a sort of personal experience around what you boys are going to talk about as well. So I guess if we just kind of kick in. I know that we were going to go around kind of the co-founder piece and how that sort of came to fruition or didn't in the end. And I guess if I just kind of let you guys speak and then I'll sure. jump in sort of as and when.
Sure, yeah. So I think first thing to get started is, you know, you have a lot of people on these sort of podcasts who have been there and done it, have launched brands, been successful, been unsuccessful, been kind of somewhere in between. But I think it's worth noting that for both Nick and I, it was kind of coming from the perspective of almost nothing. So, yeah. You know, I mean, even as far as starting up a brand, it was never something that we necessarily wanted to do. It's just one of those things that you kind of stumble into and it happens. And that's really, I think, as you mentioned earlier, Nick, that's kind of how Berksy was started. And our backgrounds are very, very different. And our backgrounds, although in some ways are definitely relevant to what we're doing today, that challenge of coming from something that is so different or you know, so out there, has certainly been a bit of a challenge. I mean, Nick, coming from a chemical engineering background.
Yeah, so I did like chemical and environmental engineering at university, and that doesn't lend itself whatsoever to what I'm doing now. So
maybe the formulations.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's some vague chemistry knowledge in there somewhere that, you know, helps me understand some real minutiae that's probably irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. But other than that, yeah, it's been a very, very steep learning curve coming from my background into, I guess, both alcohol and FMCG and all the thing that goes into building a brand and doing all that. Nick Graham's background is slightly more relevant.
Yeah, it's slightly more relevant, but still, I could have I could write a book about the things we've learned for sure. Probably a good job we're on this podcast to tell some of those things. But yeah, I've typically been kind of in the world of retail and supply chain. So I did supply chain grad scheme over in Canada in the UK. I was an early employee at HelloFresh back in the day. Back when the supply chain team was first founded, kind of a key part of the business from, you know, there being no such thing as supply chain and three or four people doing every job in the business to it becoming a little more professionalized and everyone suddenly having a role. So I kind of saw that from hyper growth to plateau to hyper growth, which is a kind of familiar journey that a lot of startups go on, which is really, really great and probably has done us good for the business and for Berksy. But then kind of took a very different turn and went into the world of management consulting. So worked for 4 or 5 years with lots of retailers across the UK, likes of Waitrose was a long-term client of mine, Burberry, Wilko and lots of other retailers. So has probably served us well in some ways, but kind of from the branding perspective and the business startup and all the things that go around actually creating Berksy, we had absolutely no idea.
Love it. But I love that as well because it's so fresh that you like it, like it's such a mission driven on product because you kind of haven't been there being like trying to think of something to launch. It's kind of that like slap in the face moment where it's like deep inside you to be like, fucking hell, we need to bring this over to the UK and put your lives on pause to launch a business. I say on pause, like just completely change where I guess you guys thought you were going in terms of life. So that, I mean, that's amazing. I think there's all of the sort of really strong product offerings out there come from that innate belief in what people do with the product and that kind of first moment of like, wow, this is great. Like, I think we could do it in a different market or we could do it better. So, no, that's really exciting. So I guess if we kind of crack on with this, I know like what we do for listeners, what we do sort of pre-recording is talk to our guests about the times that the challenges and these boys brought to us a story around a co-founder trio. That's right, isn't it?
That is right.
And so I know we're going to dive into that, but I just kind of wanted to explain how we go about it because I find myself a lot of the time just going like, tell me about the shit times. Whereas actually like there are so many good times, but obviously the reason why we do that is just that if there are any other founders out there listening to this, like the stories that we tell on the podcast, if you're going through it, know, have some solace that we all go through it and that the kind of LinkedIn messages and the kind of exciting TV appearances and all that jazz are the exciting stuff. It's all the exciting stuff, but what, it's like a swan, the kind of legs are all behind the LinkedIn. So that's kind of what we want to uncover. So yeah, boys, like crack on.
Yeah, so originally there were three friends that kind of went out to Toronto on that trip. We all came back. You know, it was one of these things where we worked on it for quite some time, kind of in the background, you know, because we didn't really know what to do. We're like, you know, there's a serious amount of Googling here. We had to go away and work everything out from scratch. You know, how do you sell a drink? How do you sell alcohol? How do you make the drink? Where do we manufacture this thing? Yeah. You know, all those questions, we had to go work that out. And obviously the time, it's like three of us kind of in our evenings, weekends, like any spare opportunity, we'd get together and work on that. And, you know, it came down to it. We're like, okay, let's actually, you know, let's form a business. We're going to need some money. We've got to write a proper business plan. We did all that together. You know, it came down to things like shareholders agreements, you know. That's one like, kind of point in my life where I was like, you know, when are you really a grown up?
Yeah.
When you're chatting with your mates about writing it, you're standing in a lawyer's office, you're drafting up shareholders agreements.
Yeah.
That's when I really looked at myself in the mirror. I was like, okay, you're an adult now.
Yeah. It's bizarre as well, isn't it? But it doesn't really sink in either. You're kind of like, almost feels like you're playing Monopoly. Like, you're like, I'm playing this game of shareholders agreements. But, and then when, I hear you. I completely hear you.
That kind of led into, you know, other, I guess, conversations that we had at the time that kind of seemed fine. You know, we basically decided, I guess it was the year, when was this, 2021, where actually we went kind of full time after having raised a little bit of money. Nick was the kind of first one to join the business in January 2021. And the way we arranged it, quite naively, I guess, is that we would stagger the start dates based on kind of the trajectory of the business. And, you know, as the kind of cash increased, we either raised more money or sales increased, we would come into the business as and when kind of the business could support us. Yeah. That was a nice, it was a nice thought at the time.
Yeah.
That was a nice thought, a little naive. But we had raised some money. We didn't want to obviously take like salaries, you know, everything's, you know, really bootstrapped at this point still. We'll come on to this as well, but we're actually on to the kind of second brand at that point as well after some interesting legals with a big corporate that sent us some nasty letters and or a nasty FaceTime call that Nick received.
Yeah,
which is quite funny. But we'll cover that shortly. But it was kind of a, you know, I then joined in kind of March 2021. All this obviously in the middle of the pandemic. So there's, you know, a lot going on in the world while we're trying to leave jobs and start the business full, you know, plow into it full time. And then it was, we were very lenient with our third co-founder, who was due to start January 2022. And then in the end, we got to kind of December 23rd, you know, 2 days before Christmas when we're sort of winding down for the year. And we get a call and he's like, you know, basically this is X cash that I want in terms of salary to support my life. I can't take any less. You know, bear in mind, Nick and I at the time, basically, you know, back living with our parents, like, living, you know, not certainly not, you know, we're privileged that we're in a position to be able to do that. And yeah, we're speaking, yeah, you know, it's obviously, it's, right, it is, yeah, relative, yeah. And you're like, we're very lucky we've got supportive families who kind of allow us to be able to do that. And yeah, parents, you know,
yeah,
delighted to help and support us.
Yeah.
But we're back there, you know, you're making pretty significant kind of lifestyle sacrifices at that point, having quit jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you then get told that, you know, I've got to be given this, got to be given that. And, you know, we were all on equal equity footing. We'd all put in equal cash.
Yeah.
But obviously Nick and I had made significantly more sacrifice in terms of actually, you know, one, giving up the salary of a reasonably nice job. You know, living with your parents isn't particularly fun.
We're 30 now, so it's only bad now.
Yeah. It was when we were 29.
29, <it's> fine.
Yeah, but
you know, there's a lot, quite a lot of pressure there and stress, and you know.
It's when you get the message from your mum being like, "What do you want for tea?" Like, or what time are you home?
Yeah.
I know exactly that feeling.
And I think what a lot of particularly founders or people in early stage businesses will probably resonate is that stage at which you go all in, and people do it at different stages. People can do it right at the start, and they, you know, can have the means to do it, and that's awesome, you know, good on them. And if you can find a trajectory of the business that allows you to do that, absolutely amazing. But the stark reality of it is, if you go all in, that doesn't mean you're going to live the same life you did before. It doesn't mean you can have the same security, the same comfort. And that all in feeling is one of excitement, definitely. And there's that point at which you're like, you know, this could be amazing. And, you know, you're always thinking, you know, one day we're going to get a great exit and this is going to be great for all of us. But there's also that element that, you know, it's a risk and, you know, it takes a lot to make that move. And if you're not kind of all in it together and you don't all feel like, you know, this is the future, this is what's going to happen, we're going to make this work. And, you know, you hear some really interesting podcasts and people talk about, you know, having no other option but for it to work. And you have to be in that mindset.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to be in that mindset, then, you know, it leaves a fair amount to be desired. And I think that's what we really came to the conclusion of.
Yeah, for us, it was like, we're putting absolutely everything on the line here. Like, everything. And for third, you know, co-founder, it's like, is this actually a bit of a hobby? And, you know, you're clearly not making the same sacrifice and or don't really believe in this. Yeah. So at that point, it's a difficult conversation of, okay, you're not prepared to go forward. And then it's a difficult conversation between, you know, old friends and an old friend of mine. And it's tough. Like, we've got, you know, investors, and it's not just then a conversation between three shareholders. It's actually, we've got to appease investors. That's really difficult. And how do you, you know, you've got to then involve lawyers and, there's proper contracts in place. It's expensive. Yeah. It's a huge waste of time and money. And the frustration levels are so high when you're dealing with, you know, and emotion when you've got this baby that you're trying to grow into, you know, a functional business that's hopefully one day profitable. And, you know, you're wasting hard cash on paying lawyers. And Lord knows I hate paying legal fees.
Well, everyone knows it's like 50 quid by the minute, right?
Well,
yeah,
and the rest.
I had a time once where I called out a lawyer to... Literally, honestly, I was just like, how's your weekend? Like, it was that kind of conversation.
Don't let them.
Yeah, man. And they sent me an invoice. I was like, you're high, mate. Like, you haven't even done anything for me. Like, crazy. But no,
I started on lawyers. We
I hear that. And I guess as well, like, the key sort of piece to take away there as well is he was a mate of yours, right?
Yeah.
So that, I guess, from an emotional standpoint, is quite difficult.
It's tough. You've got to have
in itself.
Yeah, it's still pretty fresh, and you know, we're not necessarily at the point where there's going to be friendly conversations on the back of it. We actually haven't got there yet, so we'll see. But it's, yeah, you've got to have a business lens on that. It's a business discussion.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but you've got to be like, okay, we've got to appease our investors. We can't let this little, you know, bump in the road destroy the business. So
yeah,
got to find a way through it and crack on with the kind of roller coaster.
It's a lot of mental energy. It's a lot of that kind of, and I think people resonate this whenever you're trying to create something, you get mental drain from all sorts of things. You know, where that mental drain can be from, you're not growing quickly enough. You've got to raise more money. You've got to have an awkward conversation here. You've got to have an awkward conversation there. There's all these things in your day-to-day life that take up all this emotional energy. And then when you suddenly throw another piece in there, that's when it becomes really, really tough.
Yeah.
And when it's not just pure business anymore and you're not speaking on behalf of the business, but there's a risk element of a friendship and something that you've created over time tied in with that business element, that's when it gets really, really messy.
It's so tough, isn't it? And I think going all in where you boys are at now, it's like you can't, unless you are all in, like it's hard enough as it is all in, right? And then if you're kind of not really there and not really like... And I think, it's a really key piece. And do you think there's anything that you, it's probably quite a difficult question, but if you could go back, could you see signs like early doors? Is there anything that like, now you, I mean, hindsight's a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah.
But is there kind of like, were there a couple of bits where you go, oh, okay, actually my gut's telling me this, but it's fine, he's a mate and we're in this together.
Yeah, I think we were bit naive probably from a business standpoint and probably too trusting in each other. You know, I do trust Nick 100%, so I think we've always kind of been really in the same mindset and probably had the same level of sacrifice and belief in what we're doing. I think maybe, you know, from a business lens on it, I think you'd go back to kind of the original shareholders agreements and you'd kind of, there wouldn't be any fluffy wording in there. You know, there's all sorts of legal technical stuff that we'd change. I mean, you would probably ensure uniform start dates as well.
Yeah.
Like, and if you're not doing that, it's an equity conversation and or, you know, money. It would be a hard cash. If you're not going to start, it's got to be a salary sacrifice thing. That's one thing we discussed. We discussed that briefly actually during kind of the exit discussion for, I guess, the third co-founder. But it's got to be, you've got to talk kind of hard cash and kind of fixed dates, and that's got to be set in a contract. Otherwise, you forego something serious unless that's kind of signed off.
Yeah.
You know, we had quite a woolly contract really that was like, you know, we would like to start on these dates. This is the proposed date that we start based on, you know, this coming to fruition. If it doesn't hit, then.
And I think the key with a lot of it is even if you get warning signs early on, or you get things that you feel, maybe this isn't right, it's always easier to ignore it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key with all of these things. You know, people don't like to acknowledge bad news or have that difficult conversation, because why would you want to? It's going to put you through more stress.
Yeah.
And that kind of, as we talked about, that kind of mental bandwidth that you have gets used up very quickly. So I think from that perspective, you just plow on, and you know, you've got things to do. You know, you're trying to get your baby to become a toddler and to kind of stand on its own 2 feet, and to do that, there's so many other priorities.
Yeah.
So I think definitely you see the warning signs, you know, whether that be from things of, you know, not making key meetings, not showing the same level of commitment for all sorts of different things, from, you know, big production dates or new product development, no matter what it is. If the person doesn't want to be there and be a part of that journey, that's probably your big red flag early on. I think Nick made a good point there, being kind of equal from the outset, setting the expectations up front, and dealing with things earlier. I think they're the big things that I wish we'd done. And I think it's a bit of a principle we've taken forwards now is, you know, if it doesn't feel right and you've got something that feels a bit weird, people do this a lot with investment as well and investors, and you get that weird gut feel about things.
Yeah.
Actually just knocking it on the head early and being realistic is probably a big learning on that one.
Yeah.
I think you really just learn by doing, don't you? Like, how many things like this have we seen along the road where you're like, oh, I wish we'd done this, wish we'd done that.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a lawyer explain a clause in a contract to you, but if there's no kind of depth behind it, or you can't think of a scenario where that's going to apply, it doesn't really mean anything to you at the time.
Yeah.
But when you've lived through it, you're like, oh,
especially when you're in. I think when you're in that mode of like learning from doing, it's then really difficult, right? But I think there's a really key point here where you're kind of at some point along the journey, your brain goes, well, we've got to do this for the business now.
Yeah.
But it, like, no matter how many people say that from the off, they're always putting the business first, I personally call bluff on that, because you're like, there comes a point where you're like, emotionally, he's your mate and you're doing this together and it's a really exciting project. Yeah. And then suddenly there's a crossover being like, whoa, fuck, this business is kind of working now. This is like, we now have to, it's not an idea in Canada anymore. It's like, our lives are on the line. Yeah. And like, now is kind of not so nice, Nick, that's like business, like, needs to come first. And I think that there's a really interesting point there. And but also in all of this, I think when, like, we sort of jump in different conversations on this podcast about like how you don't need to be all in to start the business, but fundamentally get your legals right, get your sort of equity pieces done, if you're getting investment, have proper shareholders agreements in place, and like, make sure you ask the questions. And I think you boys all know this like better than I will, but the asking questions is probably the biggest thing ever, right? Because you're like, if you don't know it, you ask and then you find out.
Yeah.
And I think that for anyone listening, like, always feel free to reach out to us and any of our guests, I'm sure they'll be happy to kind of help. But so, yeah, okay, and then talk me through. So that process kind of happened, and he's now left the business, right? But presumably quite a long period of time? Like,
the whole thing took over 3 months to get from kind of an initial conversation. There were, you know, probably a couple of warning signs a month before, you know, and then so really 3 or 4 months to get that over the line, and that's kind of working quite quickly, to be honest, with, you know, expensive legal fees and having lawyers do a lot of the discussion behind closed doors. So
yeah,
and no off the record conversations, you know, none of that. Hey mate, how you doing?
Yeah,
that gets removed at a certain point, just because it becomes too difficult.
Don't you? Yeah. You can't really, like, it's like you're kind of sort of stepping out of a ring and then stepping back in again. It's all encompassing, isn't it? And I guess, And the moment that you boys knew that was kind of happening, you're saying you're kind of going into Christmas, and that meant that Merry Christmas. Yeah, I was going to say that that mental capacity and something that I love to speak about a lot because I am awful at doing it personally. But like that switch off between like home life, this is Christmas. I get like it's the one time of the year where like family comes together and like everyone's supposed to kind of be on that vibe of like spending time with the close ones and going back to that kind of mental energy, I guess. Yeah. Like Christmas time, you're kind of also probably quite frustrated because
definitely, yeah,
lawyers are shut, right? So you can't even sort it out. It's like,
depends on the lawyers.
Yeah, yeah. Depends how much that hourly fee is, right? Christmas Day is fucking 600 quid.
Yeah, yeah. You pay a little sweetener on Christmas Day, I think. Really, really tough. To be honest, the timing of it all probably wasn't the worst because over that time, it's one of those rare times of the year where as a business we actually can kind of switch off a little bit, you know. We do some bits on e-com, and you know, we do quite well in retail over that period of time. And we launched a new product around that time as well. So it was kind of a busy time for the business, but at the same time, we can have a little bit of a luxury of some time off over Christmas. So from our perspective, it was kind of after that, it was a good distraction to be there with friends, family, and just kind of work out the next steps. And I think it allowed us to take stock a little bit.
Yeah, amazing.
So actually, in terms of kind of it being that time of year, in any other circumstance probably wouldn't have been ideal, but actually it allowed us to take stock a bit and kind of know what we were doing as soon as we went back in January.
Amazing. That's really interesting, and I think that kind of taking a step back and refreshing your brain a little bit is key, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. So look, I think that's a fascinating story. I know there's a couple of others that you guys kind of wanted to dive into, but I guess to kind of break up the sort of harder times, talk to us a little bit like about where you boys are now. Obviously you're on Dragon's Den a few weeks ago, the brand seems to be flying. We're coming into summer where it's gonna like hopefully be a really exciting way. You look outside, it's fucking shit, but like
we had hail this afternoon.
But like that obviously sort of bumper months ahead, just give us a feel for sort of the exciting times and where you boys are.
Yeah, for sure. So this year's been pretty crazy because I think Harry, you'll know this, but you know, Dragon's Den was a hell of an experience for us. And to be honest, Nick and I, when we filmed it, which was probably 9 months ago now.
Long time.
We came out of there and we didn't get investment. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't watched it yet. but it was a really positive experience, and I think they kind of loved it. I think we got a little bit shortchanged in that the acts that were in before us got 5 offers and had a battle between all the various people in the den. Really, really cool business there. It's called Toucan. Definitely check them out. But it was, Nick and I came out and we were kind of happy with the whole experience. And we said, you know, we didn't have to cheapen our business. We didn't say anything that we kind of didn't want to say on there. And we came out with some amazing comments and a kind of almost like a vote of confidence in us that we really, really felt. So we came out of Dragon's Den, now we filmed them. We were like, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be great for the business.
Well, they loved it, right? Stephen Bartlett, it was basically using you as a case study for 101 on marketing. Who's your target demographic? And he was like, whatever he said, he was like, oh yeah, Jenny, I know, she's exactly that target demographic. I was like, fucking hell, this is going to be in A-level textbooks, studying marketing in the future, right? It was amazing.
We got it wrong so much to get it right, but the brand, it's in a great place, and you know, we've had some great people work on it, so very fortunate. And actually, Stephen Bartlett did say that it didn't air, that it was a 10 out of 10 brand, so we only wish that was on there, but really amazing experience. And then Nick and I sat together in February when it aired, and we sat at his house and had 5 or 6 beers before, because we were like, there's no way.
I'm not watching this sober.
Oh, no, man, I did exactly the same thing.
No way am I watching this sober, because you don't have a clue. And I think how you talked about it, you know, you don't really know what's going to be on there, and you genuinely don't have a clue. We're in there over 2 hours, but we sat there, had 5 or 6 beers, and then a few of the buzzwords came out during the filming of the episode. And I don't know if you know it, but when you get a Shopify order, if people are on Shopify, you get a ka-ching on your phone. for the period of the 15 minutes of the episode, it must have been being like on Kylie Jenner's Instagram or something. Like, it was just like notification, one after the other. peaking on, I think, about 80,000
websites. Yeah, almost 100,000 people on the website at one point,
amazing.
Which is, yeah.
Amazing.
And putting a lot of strain on the warehouse.
A lot of strain on the warehouse, yeah. Tens of thousands of pounds of order. So it was an amazing experience, and it's set up this kind of quarter for our business to be amazing. And it genuinely is. I mean, there was points last year where it was really, really tough. It's a hard category. Lots of competition. Lots of big American brands have hit the market. So from that perspective, it's certainly not plain sailing. It's not kind of a category of one or two brands and you're just fighting for the shelf space. There's brands on the shelf, but it's hard getting on there. So we had some great listings last year, you know, the likes of Planet Organic and a few hotel chains. Citizen M is a big one of ours. Gorillas, Jiffy, all the kind of places you want to be. And we've done well in speciality. But from our perspective, this quarter has kind of turbocharged the business.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a tough time for other co-founders who have left the business, but it's also given us this awesome opportunity and platform to kind of grow from this point. But yeah, really, really kind of strong start to the year, and it's been a bit of a blast, really. Lots of other things planned.
Amazing.
I'm sure we'll get into it later, but a bit about kind of our US launch, which is happening at the start of May, and it's kind of everything is happening at once, which is great, but at the same time, a little bit terrifying.
Yeah. But then it's good to be terrified, right? Because that's where you kind of
pushes
you out of the comfort zone, right? I think.
Oh yeah.
Everyone just kind of jumps off a cliff, don't they? It's like, I really hope there's sort of a bed of dreams mattress somewhere at the bottom, like to spring me back up. But
it never matters. You your business could be doing so well. You have a great proposition. The branding looks amazing. But you know, the challenge of so many challenger brands, particularly in FMCG, is getting into the shelf space and getting onto shelf. And the big supermarkets and the malts is where everyone wants to be. You know, that's where the volume is. That's how you're going to make a success out of the brand and get the volume. And we have all these great things, and we've had obviously all these difficult times as well, but all these great things create an amazing story. But still, you've got to have thick skin. Because you go back and forth to retail, you have a great story to tell. It's maybe next year. It's, you know, we've just taken this brand on board. And again, going back to that kind of mental bandwidth point, it's like you don't only have to be persistent with it, but at the same time, if you don't have thick skin and you can't just
really
ride it.
Really tenacious to kind of keep on going and not give up.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got brands who've said, you know, they've done 3 or 4 years and then finally get their first big listing and, you know, that takes a patience that we probably don't have. But you know, that's a tough thing to have to take time and time again. But you know, if you believe in the product, you believe in the proposition, you know, it is that element of patience and knowing that it's eventually going to happen and preserving yourself until it does.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, like, spotting the kind of green shoots coming through is key, right? Because you're kind of... If there weren't any green shoots, you'd be like, maybe we shouldn't kind of go on. And I'm just conscious for saying that because I think a lot of people always go, keep going. But like, once the green shoots are there, it's worth watering, right?
Definitely,
but if there's no green shoots, listeners out there, if there aren't any green shoots, like, have a little rethink, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's kind of, it's so overly spoken with everybody in the industry that's like, and even you listen to the Gary Vaynerchuk's and Stephen Bartlett's of the world, and it's always this kind of keep going because something's around the corner. It's like, yes, it is, but you've got to look for those green shoots, the kind of orders that you get off Dragon's Den, the early listings in Planet Organic, the amazing kind of brand building sites when people are going, I really like this, and then coming back and buying it, then it's then like, okay, right, this is now worth sort of expanding. And US, wow, that's exciting, huh?
It's a pretty mega opportunity, really. I'm sure Nick will want to pick up on this a bit more, but it's we're going to be actually one of the first British brand to secure a big distribution deal out in the States from this category. So again, for those who weren't aware at the beginning, I think we touched on it, but massive category out in the US, about $4 billion now. We're launching into a single market over in the US, in New Jersey, which is a very interesting market because in terms of hard seltzer consumption, there's about 10 times the volume as the entire UK over in New Jersey.
That's just one state. So.
Yeah. It blew my mind when he said that. So, like, it's amazing. The opportunity over there, my uncle used to work in food and drink, and he used to work for Green and Black's Chocolate, and then went to work for Cadbury's, and he spent time in the States, and he said it was like playing for Premier League football in America. And then when he came back to the UK to work, he was like, it's like going back to Sunday League. He was like, it really is like the difference.
The scale. Yeah.
And I guess for you guys as well, building, like we're in a similar situation where we're kind of hammering on doors where the category isn't necessarily as established in the UK.
Definitely.
Even down to the wording of hard seltzer, right? Yeah. Like in the UK, a lot of people probably don't even know what a seltzer is.
Yeah, that's the thing. So people still don't understand. Like 90% probably still don't even know. If you say hard seltzer, you're like, yeah, what is that? Like you still ask that almost all the time.
Yeah.
Just for the listeners, seltzer is, I guess, the term that people use for fizzy water or sparkling water in the US. And hard, I guess, it's not a soft drink, so it's a hard drink. So hard seltzer,
it's
alcoholic fizzy water. It's kind of, I guess, where the origin of that phrase. But
Yeah,
once you understand that, it's kind of easy. But all the time you hear like people say like, "What Alka-Seltzer?" You
know,
even close.
That's what's interesting about it. It's not a decision that we've taken lightly. And you know, we have got almost exclusively US or American investors at the moment. But it was a big kind of strategic decision for us as a business, and it's not just on a kind of export basis. You know, we're fully setting up over there, and we're going to have a kind of fully running, fully established business over in the States to sell hard seltzer. But again, it's a different proposition. It looks different. It sounds different. It feels different. And I think to the point that you made, it's if you get that consumer demand and you get that sell through, there is no better market in the world to take advantage of it than in the US.
Yeah, 100%.
It's crazy. The scale you can get, the velocity you can get as a brand on sales.
Yeah.
And if it works there and it works in a single state, you can almost just move into a new state.
Also, we were a little bit taken aback by, we had on the back of our original Canada trip, we also had a week in New Jersey as well, where we saw a lot of the same hard seltzer themes. Like it was everywhere. Like everybody was drinking it. It was middle of the summer. And the shopping habits were like a little bit bizarre, weren't they? We used to, you go into the park, you pick up, a couple of tinnies on the way or something. People will go out at the weekend or like pre whatever they're doing or during the week. They'll put, 12 pack after 12 pack after 12 pack, like just stuffed in this massive like shopping cart. And they'll go to a liquor store and just buy, 100 cans or something.
Yeah.
Just stock up. And it's like they just, drink them like they're water, and it's
amazing.
It's very different, like the sort of multi-pack buying. It's a different different experience to how it is over here.
And that must be so exciting, right? Being able to go into a market where they just get it.
Yeah.
Like, because we have the same with the bars. It's like you have to explain the fact that it's savoury.
Yeah.
And even then people are like, oh, right, they try it, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's savoury. It's like, I just spent like 20 minutes fucking explaining it. It's not rocket science. Yeah, no, that's super, super exciting. I mean, yeah, as we say, it's the kind of holy grail. And I guess kind of UK, where can listeners find you? I mean, most of the people listening will know who you boys are. They'll know the brand by now. But kind of where can they find you?
Yeah. So we're in about 600-700 stores now in the UK, predominantly in the specialty market. So if you're in London, the best place is Gorillas if you want it in less than 10 minutes. I don't think they can say 10 minutes anymore. I think it's faster than you is the official term.
But Gorillas. He's paid to say that, by the way.
Yeah, shout out to Gorillas. really, really great customer of ours. Jiffy's another really good one. Planet Organic across London. We're actually going to be the only hard seltzer now in Planet Organic, which is...
Is that due to a deal with a other brands in
there?
There
were three in total.
Yeah.
We had the best rate sale in there. They loved us, so just wanted to...
Hey, amazing.
Last
partnership.
Yeah.
Wow, there's your fucking massive... Talk about green shoes. That's the that's the tree, isn't it? Yeah, amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, but a couple of the other brands who were there have gone on to do bigger and better things, so I guess there is that element too. But from our perspective, it's a real...
But I think that's great. Like when we're talking about... Sorry, I'm cutting in here, but...
Yeah.
When we're talking about like UK and building a category, like there are other brands in this space, which is so exciting because you can kind of like together collectively build something hammer on the doors, right? And as long as you boys are there being the best or within the top that's the kind of the exciting bit thing. Because I guess if you've got five brands with marketing spend all behind them, it's going to be a lot louder about what hard seltzer is than individually.
And I think for those people who are super bougie, it's up at Dalesford Farm Stores. That's a nice one. Yeah.
Dalesford, what an experience.
You spend quite a bit, but it'll be worth it.
I was going to say, you need a mortgage to get out of cash.
Soho Farmhouse as well, if you want to go check that out. If you're getting a nice hotel break, this is in M Hotels, soon to be in the Netherlands too.
Eat 17s.
All the kind of nice places across London and further UK.
Good distribution then, yeah.
Decent, yeah. We have some good distributors and suppliers. Garden centres, delis, farm shops, you'll see us there. And hopefully, a big multiple at some point. I've got that big draft sitting in my LinkedIn inbox to get everyone to celebrate our success when that happens. It's just sitting there a while, but it's
amazing.
Probably a few more.
Amazing.
Few more
have you got one about an exit as well? Because yeah. I know I did.
Yeah.
When?
Yeah, delighted to announce.
Amazing. And I think just before we wrap up, I know like we won't mention the retailer, but I know you spoke about sort of there was an opportunity to be listed in a retail partner and sort of last minute pulled the rug. Just before we kind of wrap up, just give us a really quick like sort of what that piece of business could have done, how you boys felt, what like definitely. Kind of more along the like big listing, how do you feel when it's pulled away from you rather than like the logistical piece around it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think anyone who is in, and I think I've mentioned it a couple of times, anyone who's in an early stage brand or business and trying to build something cool, the big listings are kind of where, as I said, you're going to make your money and where you're going to get that volume. So, you know, when you finally do get that opportunity to get into a big retailer, a big store, and they say, you know, it's ready to go, we're really excited to have you on board, and suddenly that's all your mind can be drawn towards. That's all you can think about. You're like, you know, but at the end of the day, we're going to be here, we're going to be there, and it's an amazing opportunity. And yeah, we got that call probably a year ago now to say, yeah, you've been successful, and you know, we're going to launch on X date. And then 2 to 3 weeks before that launch was supposed to happen, and you know, probably had those drafts sitting about Instagram and everything else. It was then, you know, decided not to go ahead with it, and you know, we've moved on to something else. And you know, for a retailer or a large business in that situation, it is business. I know how that works, and I know there's a commercial element to it, and you know, these things do happen. But from a brand perspective, it is one of the, aside from all the, you know, classic production issues you have and quality issues and things that you have to get right, it is one of the kind of most stark realities of this is as low as it can get, and this is, you know, from an unbelievable high to something where it's all been taken away. It's a feeling that I'm sure many have felt before, but when it's your baby and it's your business and it's that opportunity to go to the next step, it hits you really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've had lots of them, and we've picked up on one today, and you know, there's lots and lots of others, and we speak about for hours. But that one, from our perspective, as big an opportunity like that, it does hit you really, really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's such an important piece here as well, because no one really speaks about the relationship between retailers and brands, certainly challenger brands, buyers and brands, where you're like, you guys are putting your life on the line here to build something, and it's all in the hands of one person saying yes or no, who is sat in an office that has a comfort blanket of the salary, that has the comfort blanket of a bigger retailer around them, and there's a team, and if something goes wrong for them, it's like, oh, ops, sort it out. And there's that piece where actually, like, if there's any buyers out there listening, like, I wish more buyers would listen, by the way, so tell them to listen. But there's a disconnect in terms of the emotional side. And obviously, as we spoke about, it's business, right? They have to make those decisions. But the way they go about it and the short notice of that just struck me as kind of one of those, like, come on, if it was a Unilever, it'd be slightly different. They'd just plug the volume elsewhere by doing a gondola end somewhere else, right? But for the smaller brands that put their kind of life on the line to do it, like, yeah. So any buyers out there, give us a bit more notice, please.
I think the thing is, well, you can't ever dwell on it, can you? Because
no. That's
the problem. When there's three or four of you sitting there in a business and you're trying to build something, it's like, as soon as that finishes, it's like, on to the next thing. Because what's next? Where's our next opportunity coming from? And that's the part that is so, so difficult. It's like, you've got to have that almost kind of strength, just be like, right, well, that's behind us, what's the next thing?
Yeah.
Because if you can't do that and you dwell on it for too long,
that's it.
There goes your baby.
Absolutely. And I think that like Dragon's Den experience sum that up so much for me, where you're kind of like, you film it, as we've said, like 7-8 months previous. And by the time it goes out, you're almost kind of like, over the experience is wrong, but you're kind of, you boys will be like, well, we're launching into the US soon.
Yeah.
So it's like that, it's still nerve wracking watching it,
yeah.
But that whole kind of like next, it's like, when does that end goal go? Like, looking back now, we're stocked similar, like Whole Foods, Planet Organic, places like that, where a few years ago, had someone said your products will be in Planet Organic, you probably would have bitten their arm off and be like, well, I want to be there now.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, I want to be in New Jersey. I want to be the best selling brand in New Jersey. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just funny, isn't it? And there's such a big, I mean, we haven't got time to go into it, but there's such a big mental health piece around like how you become in the moment and how you like appreciate the wins for what they are and where it goes.
Taking some time as well to like actually savor the wins and, you know, appreciate where you've got to as well. Like when you're right in the thick of everything, it's hard to see those victories. But when you look back and you're like slowly kind of, it's almost like you're walking up a mountain. Obviously it's going to be, you know, some false peaks and you're going to go up and down, but gradually you are going up. Well, for us so far, anyway. you're certainly going up. So you take a step back and think about where you've got to, and you're actually, you know, we're doing all right. Let's keep our heads down. We'll get there. And just kind of having that.
Yeah.
You know, amazing. Like I said, just keep.
And going. Any kind of tips and tricks for listeners? I say tips and tricks. Like, what help you sort of switch off, as it were, or kind of like, for me, it's, I've got a little cocker spaniel and it's like non-negotiable. We're in the park at 6:30 every morning. Now again, if you could see me, this isn't me being like, I'm in the gym at 6 a.m. and then I've sort of read 15 books by 12. Like, that's not it at all, but it's just my little bit is that it's the walk in the morning, and that kind of clears my head and allows me to just sort of reflect on where we are and a bit of a passion project. As passion project, he's a dog, but like like the enjoyment of kind of walking and working with him.
I thought
that'd
be the dog.
Quiet.
I don't know, actually.
I think like exercise and stuff helps clear the head. That's
been
definitely. Big one for us. Like, well, actually, we're both running a marathon in about 3 weeks, which very undertrained for.
Which one?
First one.
Toronto.
The Toronto Marathon.
Oh yeah, nice.
Park.
Oh, that's cool.
I promise that's going to be a big success plug on LinkedIn. It's going to be like, here we are, back to where it all started.
I can run a marathon and down a can of hard seltzer.
I think that's a big one, though. Like, going out and doing exercise, like, making time for yourself, you know, even if you're super busy, like, put an hour aside, do some exercise, you know, get the endorphins from doing that and kind of, do make time for yourself, and like it makes a huge difference. It helps you focus on whatever you're doing, even if I'm running, you know, or whatever. I love cycling as well, so that's a big one. If I go out on a bike ride, I'll spend 2 hours. I'm not talking to anyone. I'm just thinking about
how knackered you are.
Why I'm so unfit, and two, you know, that you do. It's like it's oxygen in the brain, and it helps you kind of like think about the wider picture and what's going on.
Yeah. We had one of the very early guests of Untold was Giles Breck, and he obviously does quite a lot of cycling, and it's crazy the stuff he does. But he was saying one of the like his team around them can always tell when he's been on a long cycle ride, because he'll get back and it'll just be like email, like all the things he's been waiting to make a decision on is now just decision done, move on.
He's
like,
his mind on the bike.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, when you're doing an Ironman, what's that like? I don't even know how long that takes.
Hours,
but
ten,
so you've got quite a lot to think about, haven't you? But
I'm not sure I have much thinking time.
Amazing. And you can tell the difference here. I'm talking about a half an hour walk with my dog, and you boys are off to run a marathon. So wonderful.
Ill prepared.
So, we haven't finished.
Amazing. And comms wise, just as we wrap up, where, like, LinkedIn, social media, all that sort of jazz, what are the handles, and can people contact you?
Reach out if you've got any burning questions. It's Berksy Drinks on Instagram.
That's cool. BERCZY Drinks.
Yeah. Obviously on Facebook as well, LinkedIn, it's Nick Johnson and Nick Graham.
Yeah. But feel free, reach out, message. it's always cathartic speaking about these things. You always feel a bit better afterwards. So yeah, reach out and yeah, follow us on social media.
Amazing, guys. And as always, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate the listeners. And if you do like it, we are Untold Podcast. If you don't, we are Hungry Podcast. I'm only joking, Dan. Thanks so much for giving us your time. And we'll speak to you soon. Cheers, boys, for coming in. And great time of chat. Cheers. Ta-da. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to Untold. As always, we are so grateful that you give us a little bit of your time.
We really, really are. And as ever, please do give us some feedback. We love it. So any reviews, please subscribe, obviously, as well. It helps us with the old ratings position in the podcast, wherever you download them. But yeah, please do let us know what you thought of the episode. We love to hear what you guys think.
And as always, this episode is brought to you by The Savourist. We make lip-smackingly delicious savoury snacks that can be found at www.thesavourist.com or the.savourist on Instagram and TikTok. Ciao for now. See you next time.